Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Ian Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, hello.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Well, it's very sad to say today, but Daniel Dennett has passed away. Daniel Dennett was just an amazing writer, professor, and philosopher. When I think of people who've been extremely influential on me, absolutely him, his book, Darwin's Dangerous Idea and Consciousness Explained, they had a very profound way on the way that I looked at the world, the way I understood arguments and would think about thought experiments.
Well, and I barely remember Consciousness Explained from when I read it back in college 30 years ago. And I have not read the other books. And I know that philosophers be philosophing about, you know, who's right about what aspects and so on. But it sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly, the most profound part was the simplicity with which he explained stuff that was the real gift.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a number of the ways that he would phrase stuff. For example, talking about the idea of at what level, you know, talk about like if you're, but the idea, if you're talking about like the idea of, you know, veganism or, you know, looking at animals, at what level do you think of something as being conscious or having some form of sentience or whatever, you know, how many neurons does it take? And he talks about, you know, if your arm gets severed in a car accident and they want to reattach it, should you use an anesthetic on the arm? Because the arm feels pain. And some of these things start off as kind of ridiculous, but then you think about it and you go, okay, so if my arm has more nerve endings than some other form of life or something, how do I think about that? How do I, you know, think about this, put in context? And there wasn't always an answer, but it was a really good question to help you understand that sometimes these things weren't as clear cut as we may think, or you have to make, you know, a line somewhere.
It sounds like you have more teed up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, like the arm example is fascinating because like the arm is certainly sending the signals of pain, but does it feel pain itself is an interesting question. And to what extent? Mm-hmm. And I must admit that the more dogs I have in my life, the more I question where the boundaries are of consciousness, because I have a Weimaraner named Joyful, and there's no doubt that there is a discussion that is being had. Like, she knows what I'm saying when I open up the door and, you know, tilt my head to go outside. And I know when she sits there and just looks at the door, looks at me, looks at the door, looks at me, we're having a negotiation. And then sometimes I take a couple steps forward and she's like, okay, fine. And off she goes. Mm-hmm. Other times I have to I don't even have to grab her collar. I just touch her collar and she's like, okay, fine. Like there's definitely some form of consciousness there. And these are the borderlands that I think Dennett was so good at exploring.
Yeah, or you might say there's intelligence. Is there consciousness? Because there can be one without, you can have intelligence without consciousness. But yeah, it's I love that, because a lot of times in reading is that there weren't specific answers. I think, you know, he'd talk about, I think it would, you do like, you know, the idea of, you know, the soul or that, like, you know, what happens if you teleport, you destroy the matter, you create it. Or what if you go to sleep at night and we take 1% of your brain and replace it, and we do this over a series of, you know, 100 nights.
Like a ship of theses.
Exactly. He could apply that to these things. And I loved it because he loved science and you could read him, and he was very compatible with, you know, like I loved reading him, Matt Ridley and Richard Dawkins. Those people were like my favorite. Those were my three really like just key people that just really profoundly influenced the way I looked things, because they were, I could take ideas from one and apply them to the other and apply them to the other. And they were just extremely, you know, compatible.
To be honest, I could spend the next hour just hearing more examples of things that landed with you.
Well, I would, I mean, again, I recommend like Consciousness Explained is, it's not that big of a book. I think it's a really good intro to it. Like two of my favorite books are Consciousness Explained by Dennett and then River Out of Eden by Richard Dawkins, because both of them are very good, concise distillations of the things they've been thinking about. And it's a really good intro. Darwin's Dangerous Idea is a great book, but it's a huge tome, you know, and when you go embark upon that, you know, you're ready to take a college course, you know, essentially. Yeah. the wonderful material in there. So Brian, it's funny you should mention that though, about your dogs, because tell me what kind of work your dogs do.
They provide joy and companionship. Now, what's interesting,
sounds like a couple of layabouts. Yes, I mean,
yeah. What's interesting,
not pulling their weight,
so
earning
so,
their keep.
So at one point, we 10 years ago, we had some dogs that we needed to learn how to train, and the dog trainer understandably was really training us and not the dogs. And the way he expressed it is like, dogs want to have a job and they want to earn their keep. So make sure that you set them up to feel that every single time. So it's like, don't just give them food. Instead, they will feel better about themselves insofar as they have a themselves if you have them sit or solve a puzzle or but you know, I just enjoy having a soft, fuzzy, beautiful barking beast to hold.
Well, Brian, I don't think you're getting the most out of your dogs, to be honest with you.
Oh no. And oh, are we about to hear some amazing dog tales?
Well, I sent you a link. I would say that American dynamism, we may have lost some of it. I'd like to bring it back. And we'll know a good sign of that will be when we get a reintroduction of machines that are designed to be powered by dogs. Like, how would you like to churn butter with your dog? Why don't you put your dog on a treadmill, have it attached to a butter churning machine, which somebody filed for a patent. How about using your dog to power your three-wheel bicycle? You could do that.
Now you're talking.
Giant wheels. There's a wonderful photo essay on Gizmodo, and a story written by Matt Novak, and just a lot of examples. Just ignore the one where there's dogs inside of a water wheel and a guy holding a whip. We don't need that. images of dogs like in just like wheels, you know, like suspended from a ceiling, turning a wheel that's turning like a roast in a fire. Like, just you wonder how much of this was for real, how much of it not. Just a sewing machine worked by a dog. There's just a bunch of these great examples of like this. There's a man, you want to talk about something that's doubly.
No, here we go. We are looking at these photos. Now, a lot of how can we make a dog in a wheel do a thing? This was a genre of like anything with a crank. We can chuck a dog in a wheel for it. Maine, you blinked out for a second there, but which of these is your personal favorite? Nope, he is apparently still blinking. Meanwhile, back to these wheel dogs.
How about a sewing machine worked by a dog?
That's pretty amazing. Although, no, that actually is, I mean, not to pass any judgment on these particular devices, but I have not used that level of sewing machine, but I would imagine consistency is a real big part of it. And I don't know if a man's best friend would be able to carry that.
Well, but if you had like a flywheel that was able to capture the energy and then release it at a regular rate.
Oh, so it would just be at whatever speed the dog is running, it is continuing to move at an even pace.
Correct.
Next one coming up here in like two more slides. There you go. It's not only a modern rogue episode.
A Mono Rogue episode.
So this is Bruno Mobile midget car has a one dog power engine.
Remember when that word was not rude?
I think those are is that not an automotive term still?
I'm sure. I mean, I don't know. A lot of words have changed over the lot of years.
Yeah. Well, regardless, we apologize.
Yeah. No, it's not our job to apologize for history. History be historying.
Can you go back and read that paragraph? Because it's a great practical starting point advice.
Yeah, sure. Okay. The paragraph says, youngsters.
No, read it in a voice that this would be read in, like a radio play.
Ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea, youngsters will have great fun with this unusual dog-powered midget auto. The design here is laid out to the correct size for a Fox Terrier engine. Police dogs will also require a larger wheel. A bicycle sprocket and a chain drive is used, and the larger sprocket being used on the driving wheel shaft. The gear reduction obtained here allows even a small dog to propel this car at a satisfactory rate. Ball bearings made of roller skate wheels are best for supporting the cage. A satisfactory brake is easily made and will slow down the novel vehicle quickly, even though the motive power is inclined to keep running.
Like, we live in an era where we get worried about things you might buy on, like, Alibaba or Temu, or you get sold on Instagram. What a golden age of just flimflam that these magazines would come out and somebody would say, like, you can have a plane. And you're like, what? You're 11, right? You're reading Boy's Life. It's 1950 something. The world just got out of war. And you're just like, I can build a plane in my backyard. And then you beg your parents for 20 cents, which is now $2,000. And 3 months later, you get four pieces of plywood and a Phillips head screwdriver, and they say, follow directions, bye.
I once bought something from the Johnson Smith catalog that was labeled as a 40-foot long UFO. And I was like,
40 feet?
Yeah. 40-foot long UFO. I think it was like $5.
Of course. And, yep. Checks out.
And it says, imagine your neighborhood on a Sunday afternoon. Blue skies abound. And yet there is a genuine UFO. And it even says UFO on it. So that you know it's a UFO. I suspect Andrew already knows what I got. But Justin, do you have a guess what I received?
I assume you just kind of got a balloon.
Well, a balloon would be made of latex, which is expensive and needs to be inflated with helium.
Yep.
How about a 40-foot long tube of garbage bag material?
Oh my God.
Because it's black, which means it'll accept all of the sun's heat.
Yes.
And as we know, things that are hot rise.
Gotcha.
So basically in the backyard,
you just leave it out and eventually a gigantic garbage bag will rise from your backyard.
There was also,
we used to be a proper country.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I got distracted here because I went to YouTube and I typed in dog powered machinery.
Oh dear. Here we go.
Should I do the same?
Who let the dogs out of YouTube and into this machinery?
All right, so I'm at YouTube now. I'm typing in dog powered machinery. Dog powered machinery. Assuming our search histories are remotely similar, which one would you like to see?
I just looked at, I haven't looked at any of them yet. So I just was the point of discovery right now.
Okay. Well, here, the very first one.
Go ahead. Yeah. Give us, give us a little
close up of dog powered machine.
Let's do. Oh, I'll tell you what, now I'm in. I was skeptical before, but I'm in right now.
It's straight up just a Labrador.
So what it looks wheel. Like some kind of either Renaissance fair or Maker Festival, but it is a semi-permanent structure that is built. This dog is running in a gigantic hamster wheel. And it is turning something. God knows what it's doing, but it is certainly generating.
Sharpening stone.
Is that it? Okay, yeah, it's like sharpening things.
And the dog looked happy.
Yeah. Dogs like to run.
Yeah, turns out dogs like to move. It's almost like they were built to do that.
All right, I'm going. So
this one seems like a bit more of a joke, but it's very popular. It says, quick turkey stuffing hack, dog powered.
Sounds like some hijinks. All right, this is like a Rube Goldberg situation.
Okay, all right. So a machine throws some carrots.
There we
and
go.
Celery.
All right, I think we're done.
Oh, yeah. That was it.
I think the dog started. Yeah. The dog bumped the.
Okay, that was dumb. That was bad. Bad engineering.
Well, here's what's not bad, folks. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you need to go if you want to support this program. Thank you to everybody who does it.
We've talked about this before. The rate of development and things coming out is just insane. Mm-hmm. And this week, recapping things in tech that happened that we're getting a year. Every week is now a year.
That's BS, fact. Right? I mean, it would have taken a year in a normal tech cycle for Mark Zuckerberg to want to apply a chain and make that a part of his public persona like he did today announcing the Meta AI features.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a second. Is that Facebook consumes the second largest number of GPUs, or you know, on par with Microsoft, the two biggest purchasers of GPUs in the world, and from like NVIDIA. And so they've been using it. One, they were using it to do a lot of 3D and a lot of the rendering, a lot
of other stuff.
Yeah, well, in AI, they've been doing open source model releases, or sometimes the license, you know, the licensing is kind of weird. Like you can't have more than like 7 million customers, whatever. But their Llama models that they've been done have released are really, really high quality models. And they just released Llama 3, which on evals looks like it's close to GPT-4 in tests and probably an older version of GPT-4. And I will say evals are hard now. They're very, very hard because there are models that some people love and I use and I go, no, I can't do this, because when I get into I do a lot of code and I know sometimes the coding problems I ask are several step and layer and they won't do it, but they might do other things really well. And so we're into kind of subjective space where it's hard to say what are the best models for certain tasks. But this Llama 3 looks like it's a fantastic model by all accounts, the metrics, whatever. It is the clear leader, as far as we know, for open source. And it's sending out waves because there's a method called mixture of experts, which has been used on a lot of other bigger models, which is sort of be training separate things, training things separately. They didn't use that for it. We're just sort of digging into now that what they do and how they built it, but they've released a very, very incredible competitor, and it's open source and you can run it on all kinds of different platforms.
Yeah. I saw a lot of the buzz in the AI folks that I follow were about how impressive it was and how fast it was, that it was extraordinarily capable.
Yeah. So, and that's a good on them. It's funny is that, somebody I know at opening, I had commented, congratulate on them. And some tech reporters like, well, the good, they're like, why don't you work at OpenAI? Why don't you release GPT-4? It's like,
you mean 5?
Cool. Yeah. Like become an ad tech company. Like I understand, like it's different goals, different motivations there. And there is an end goal for Zuckerberg. There is an end game here, and it's not, you know, doing free stuff forever. I mean, maybe, but I think it's a net good the way that they've released this, what they've done. I think it's going to benefit a lot of people. It's going to help improve AI training, et cetera, all that. But it is, it's funny where, you know, people kind of look at motives and.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think also, tech journalism is broken, and it's been broken for a long time. And especially in situations like this, it just kind of demonstrates how stupid everything is. Speaking of stupid, Brian, can you please look up Mark Zuckerberg's announcement? And just, I want your opinion on his chain.
The man
is in his bro era. He's been training at MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a while.
Oh dear.
And bro Zuckerberg is here. And I got to tell you, I'm here for it. I'm here for bro Zuckerberg. Bro Zuckerberg can't hurt you.
Oh my God. I thought this was not him. I thought I was watching just a crap TikToker. But
I didn't have quite enough time
to
go out and get a t-shirt.
We are releasing the new version of Meta AI, our assistant.
Just go throw it up there. Throw it up so everybody can see it.
And our goal is to build the world's leading AI and make it available to everyone.
He looks bigger though.
I wouldn't have
these are half the guys that I had to go pitch ideas to in LA.
I know. There is this weird thing. You know, Bezos got jacked. Zuckerberg's getting jacked. I mean, when Larry and Sergey start doing like one of those Cirque du Soleil routines where they lift each other up with one hand, it's over for all of us.
I between that and the New Zealand and bunkers, it's like they know something.
Yeah, like they're getting That's ready for Mad cool Max. Plot.
Like I am looking into the eyes of somebody who wants to sell me a health supplement. Like it's really weird.
I gotta say, upgrade though. Like, I mean, we're joking because he's a very famous person, but I think he looks a lot better than his old look.
Yeah. It's, you know, the hair's grown out a bit. Like, yeah, I think, you know.
He does look like a teenage drug dealer with the thin silver chain.
The chain was the only thing that I was going to comment upon. I was like, that's a choice. That's a choice he made.
It's like you're reaching in to the drawer. You see the puka shells. You see the thin silver, and you're like
the bear claws.
Exactly. Let's save the puka shells for the weekend. This is a business situation. Let me go ahead and grab the silver chain.
My chest hair growing supplement will allow you to go three buttons down, and the ladies to see how hairy you are.
Right now, you are, you know, you have the pulse of this a lot more. The Llama 3 buzz is all very good.
Yeah, Llama, so far people are just starting to dig into it, but it's being deployed. You know, it's already on Access. You can try it now. You can use it on Meta's website. You can interact with it. Replicate.com, which is my favorite place now to play with different models. I think they've deployed it. Grok Q, you know, Grok with the Q company, you know, they're, you know, I think they're going to be adding it. So we're just seeing a lot of deployment for it. So, you know, it's another capability. Now it's a big, 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 big model. It's really, really big, but you know, it seems very capable for the size of it. So pretty amazing. So
yeah,
like I said, it will happen as people will start to fine tune these, train them on different things, etc. You know, did I show you before on replicate.com the image generator and how fast it can generate like multiple images in a second?
Yes. Yeah. No. Last week you showed us just insanely fast.
Yeah, there's one that will take multiple prompts, like so you can give it like five different prompts, click it, and it'll just start spitting them out. This stuff is just moving crazy fast. Boston Dynamics announced that they were retiring their Atlas robot. That was their pneumatic robot. But then they unveiled a new Atlas, which I sent Brian a link to. And who's ready to see the thing that the last thing you see before you get murdered?
Okay. All right. Hold on. I unfortunately have multiple browsers and not all of them are logged into the same thing at the same time. Let me see if this one is logged into my account because that's the one that'll let me.
While Brian is doing that, Maine, where are we at now with Boston Dynamics? They were spun out by Google, right? And now they are a fully independent operation?
I think Google may have invested in them.
Okay.
They're owned by Hyundai.
Oh, okay. So, gotcha.
Yeah, they had, I'm looking at their Wikipedia to look at that. They were acquired by X. They had started independently, and then Google's X division had bought them.
Gotcha.
And then by management Andy Rubin, and then they sold it to SoftBank.
Okay.
And then Hyundai bought them. So it was basically they've had kind of an interesting record. And my assessment of the company is this, is that it is a very hard to building a thing is hard enough to then figure out how you're going to take the thing and mass produce it. And I think that was the problem that they faced was the like Spot and Atlas. These things were amazing. But then if you say, okay, how do I build 100,000 of them? Well, you can't build it the same way you built your prototype because that's ridiculously expensive. You know, and for an example right now, you know, the truck company Rivian, you know, the electric vehicle company, I think Rivians are beautiful vehicles. People who have them love them. Rivian spends almost twice as much per vehicle as they sell them for.
Wow. Really? They're underwater?
Very. Their projections, and not financial advice, not an expert. Please look to your own. They do not look good because they've had to discount. They've done some things like changing, you know, like out changing battery pack like specifications, but it's the same battery pack to try to lower the price. They've announced they've got a new vehicle they're going to come out with because I think they've realized they're just too at the high end of the class. There's just not enough, you know, consumers for that. But there's the concern like that you guys can't build this thing at this cost.
Yeah.
Or are you going to be able to do that or the other thing? And I wish them well. I want them to succeed, but they're facing that problem of, you know, you need a genius, a mad genius, if you will, when it comes to your supply chain.
Yeah.
And it comes to all these other factors like Elon Musk is, I think, can be a crazy person, but you put him in a factory.
One example.
Really? Maybe I'm overstepping. You're right. I'm sorry. You put him into a factory and you say, how do we make it more efficient? And he will change everything and sometimes go, whoops, that was a mistake. Then go back. But he has been very much a contrarian about stuff, but I think consistently has been right. Apple, we've talked about this before. Who runs Apple? Tim Cook. Supply chain guy.
One of our favorite to stay on Apple for a second, but I know for me and you, Andrew, the Steve Jobs quote of like real artists ship, part of that is not only just it finishing it and getting it out into the public, but getting it out into the public for a company like Apple at a price point for which they are comfortable, they make a good margin, and yet it feels like a luxury item that is worth the amount of money that the end customer pays for it. That is an art. Like that is something, especially when you are moving at the units that some of these companies that we're talking about on it's huge. And it's even more pressure when you are dealing with a vehicle, oftentimes the most expensive purchase that somebody's going to make in their life next to a house.
And what we've seen with a lot of particularly like the Boston Dynamics Spot robot, which looks really cool. But again, last I checked, it was like $100,000. But you get other companies come in, and then, you know, Chinese companies will go in and they will make way, way, way cheaper versions of that. And so what happens is that, you go, well, you know, do I have a use for this? Unitree has their Spot knockoff. There's just a number of like, and that's a challenge, is you've got to figure out how to manufacture these things at scale. And if you can't do that, you're going to be stuck where it's going to be really, really hard for you to find your market. So like, Unitree has their version of like Spot came out. It was something like $100,000. Unitree has a $2,500 version of that. Another company, robotics company. And so
I finally figured out which browser was logged into my account. So we have a video that appears to look like Atlas laying down dead or
the new one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's play it.
Let's take a look.
And hold on for audio listeners, before the video starts playing, Atlas looks very humanoid, but not with the gigantic upper body that you had seen with previous Boston Dynamic robots. This one just looks extraordinarily
looks more like human. A triathlete.
Yeah, there we go.
With a headlight for a head.
Yes.
Oh, poor robots laying on the ground dead. Oh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So it is now... Its legs went backwards, and then its entire torso has turned around.
Are they on purpose trying to get more horrific?
Creepy, yeah.
The walking moly. So a couple things here. So for audio listeners, what made the robot interesting is because the limbs can kind of rotate, the legs can rotate, the arms can rotate. It's laying like, looks like it, maybe it's laying face down.
Yeah.
And to pick itself up, the legs just curl back over in a very inhuman thing. And then it turns into a squat and lifts up. And then the head spins around and each leg just separately rotates to spin around to face forward. And it looks, look at the walking gait for a moment while we still get that.
Yeah, the walking gait is a little bit herky jerky, but every other move was very
compare
precise.
That to, but look at the upright; it is more C-3PO and less old hunched over man.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. How much of that is attributable, if we're going to speculate, to let's say power of batteries, power of computing, all of that stuff?
It is. Computing, it is how you position your servo motors. So the problem with walking fully upright is that the amount of balance that it takes. And so that is a compute thing, and also sensitivity to understand, you know, one of the things it's like that makes the drone industry and everything else, you know, is possible is basically signal processing and being able to get your data on basically what's the position of your motor right now? Are you falling over? How do you compensate? And if you don't have enough of you measure things like in frequency range, like if you don't get enough information within a span of time about your balance, then it's really hard to correct. That's one of the things that made, you know, drones possible was with way better chips because of the development of cell phones and stuff, is they could process millions of things per second. So they could very precisely understand, you know, what their axis was and that they were trying to go one way or the other, and then adjust the motor control and do this. So these things all play into a factor.
It's all happening very quickly.
And it's only going to happen fast.
I know.
and some shade has been thrown because we've talked about Figure AI, which uses GPT-4 vision inside their robot.
Yep.
And somebody had pointed out the hip, the joint between the chest and the waist here, uses this very interesting sort of like kind of gimbal arrangement. And the Figure has said, hey, that's ours. We patent it. And so we'll see what happens with that.
Robot wars.
Well, yep. and oh my God, patent wars weren't fun. Robot wars are sometimes fun, but robot patent wars where everybody's able to research everything going back to the beginning of time. And because as we know, a patent is, you don't actually have to make a dang thing. All you have to do is say, I had an idea and I have enough money to register this.
Yep. And that's part of what happens is that you put together your patent portfolio, not so that you're going to litigate against other people, but it's to protect you if somebody tries to go against you. And because what will happen is, you know, maybe, you know, Apple might do a thing and Google's to be like, well, you did this thing, we did that. And then Apple's be like, yeah, but you did this thing and we have a patent for that. And that's often sort of what happens. People will buy into patent portfolios to protect themselves from, you know, basically other, that's one of the, you know, the kind of the purpose they've become now. And it is interesting too, is that like, you know, providing, you know, that kind of protection is, you know, essential. I think patents provide an incredible advantage though, because if you're a smaller inventor or smaller developer, first to market just doesn't work, you know? Yeah. And, you know, if you want to go show a company your thing and they go, cool, bro, we're taking it. You can ask them to sign NDAs and stuff like that. But by the time you try to litigate your way out of it, it's hard. So I am a believer, like I do believe in patents that are properly scoped are very useful. And scoping is critical there too.
I'll tell you what, we are watching this now in slow motion. And it is fascinating. It is just truly, truly remarkable. And Maine, I know you are a big, big, big believer in the robot age, which we are entering into, and specifically how much AI can supercharge that. I would imagine that something like that happens with models like these that are brought to a level that are replicatable in terms of cost.
Well, yeah, like we mentioned before, and about the fact that it's can be very hard to put things into mass production. And I'm going to send you a link, Brian, here to Unitree, which I would say that they may have been getting a lot of inspiration from Boston Dynamics, but also illustrates that it's one thing to be able to build a thing. It's another thing to actually start being able to mass manufacture it. And I think that we saw that with like the Segway. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Segway was, hey, we have this really cool self-balancing technology. We're going to try to revolutionize the world with these things. And other people looked at it and said, cool, but what if I got rid of the handle and put it into a little thing and we have a hoverboard? You know,
right.
We have those things. And kids with baggy jeans can, you know, ride those around and tear and
break their collarbones.
Yeah. Or Mark Zuckerberg's new outfit.
Yep. And then you get like from there, like the mono wheel. I've seen those things still amaze me when you see those things flying around.
I still don't understand how people use them, to be totally honest with you. I am that old.
As I understand terrified. it's pretty much just a snowboard, which is also dangerous. But
you're not making if you scroll down to there's a video on the, yeah, if you scroll down, you'll see the video of them doing the kicking the robot, which they're remembering all this.
Oh yeah.
This is the Unitree H1. It's $150,000. It does not have hands. It just has basically things to punch you in the face with. You can buy now with the PayPal button. If you want to get one,
anybody with $150,000 sitting around in PayPal.
Yep. And so I don't know what you'd use it for.
Yeah. If you were creating a robot football league, you could have like a linebacker.
For only a few million dollars, you can field two robot football teams that you can play against each other.
Now, if you go back and you look at the Unitree Go 2, which is their version of the robot dog, and that starts at $1,600.
Oh, wow. Cheap price to move.
Yeah. And that was compare that to when Spot came out and how expensive that was. And I don't know. I have no idea how capable this was. This, you know, what, how good they are, whatever.
Wait, $1,600?
What's that?
Yeah.
$1,600 for a dog robot.
Yeah. You love dogs, Brian. What about a dog robot?
Brian, scroll down. Keep scrolling.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
Okay. They're free for YouTubers?
What?
I'm joking.
Keep going. Oh my God.
Keep going. There we go.
Oh, it's a companion to run by you. Boy, that is.
Yeah, they show a guy out running in a park and the robot's running next to him.
If you want to simultaneously scream douche and wealthy, this is the $1,600 investment for you.
What if you had a little cooler on it or something and you were handing out?
Now they show the thing avoiding drinks. I mean, that's it. They show the thing avoiding obstacles like trees, etc. I would say that these systems are very capable. They have LiDAR, they're able to look around. When you start, why I keep saying we're on the verge of a robot revolution. When you start taking some of these really highly capable language models and pairing them with these systems and some of the stuff they're going to be able to build on board, because you could build, you know, you could take a tinier, smaller, like, you know, AI model, like a 7B, like a 7 billion parameter, which can fit in like 8 gigs, put that on board there and talk to it as you run and have it play your music and do whatever, have it walk around the house and be able to do things. Like, this is happening, folks. Like, you're going to see way more robotics, way more places now because of the advancements in robots and now LLMs.
Like, oh my all the ingredients are here. Oftentimes when we've had conversations like this, it has been contingent upon a breakthrough or many breakthroughs. We've got everything that you would need to cook up something really, really interesting. And that's what's fascinating about it.
The idea of talking to your assistant, your robot assistant, while you're on a jog is fascinating. Like the idea to be remind me, what's the schedule for today, next week?
Basically, it would be what you would do with ChatGPT-4 on your phone right now,
right,
which you talk to all the time. It's just a little robot dog that wanders around with you.
Oh my God. Gotta go back to the front. Go look at their version, the Unitree B2, which is expensive. It's like $100,000. It's another quadruped. And the videos on that are insane and also terrifying.
B2.
Yeah,
okay.
The
B2. All right. Scroll all right. Down. So
this is $100,000.
This one's more like a lynx instead of a dog.
It's very fast. They show an example of it going upstairs and somebody pulling on a rope to try to stop it from doing that. Navigating an environment filled with banana peels. How they say it's the fastest running industrial grade quadruped, 6 meters per second. And then we get examples of it jumping from one spot to another. Did you see the jumping example? I think it's a little higher up there.
Okay.
Next one up.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. Yeah. A full meter.
Oh my God. Jump.
Yeah. It looks so from a platform to a staircase or jumping from platform to the ground.
It looks like a video game, the way that the legs move, because it is perfection.
I mean, you're going to, and like I said, we saw the smaller versions. You're going to get like, would I pay, $5,000 to have a thing that patrolled my house, and then during the day and then at night it went outside?
I mean, considering what you paid for your coffee machine, sure.
Oh my God. Yeah. Apple Vision Pro, like the other one was, I could have got that instead of my Apple Vision Pro, I could have got a robot and terrify the neighbor kids.
Yeah.
Well, at the very least you could terrify the coyotes that are hanging around. Yeah.
I know what somebody's getting for Christmas.
So, kind of fast paced, guys. I'm going to close with one more thing. We're going to take a dive into the past.
Okay.
Scientists have found a new fossil, which may be the largest what? They found it in a mine in India.
The largest elephant.
Yeah, I was going to say land mammal.
It's on land, not a mammal.
Okay.
Largest what? A lizard? Wait, a fossil. Is it like the world's largest bug of all time?
No.
Is it the world's largest tree?
No, it's got to be an animal.
Does it?
Well, I think so.
Does it have to be an animal, Andrew?
It is an animal.
Okay.
Animal, and it's not a world's largest marsupial.
No, this thing lived about 47 million. This specimen, they believe, lived 47 million years ago.
World's largest bird.
No,
cow. I guess that'd be a mammal. I'm sorry, I'm fresh out of guesses. What was it?
So this is a new species of snake.
Oh dear God. It's always snakes.
Too long. It's always snakes.
We
forgot what show we were on. Spiders or snakes.
I know. It's been too long. We've been too head down on AI for too many weeks.
So we don't know when the species went extinct or did it, but this specimen, they think it may have been as long as 50 feet, which would be longer than Titanoboa, which is the, you know, the record holding in, you know, monsters.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, kind of cool, kind of terrifying.
It's only 50 feet longer than Brian's UFO. No, that is extraordinarily terrifying. And that was found just recently in India.
The spot, yeah, the vertebrae, yeah.
Is there an indication of how thick it was? Like, are we talking tree trunk or how big, wide?
What was the girth on that? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and I think that, you know, there is a factor there. Largest specimen of a reticulated python that we ever caught was 33 feet, which is insane.
Very, very long. I mean, think
there is 33 foot
long, longer than the somewhere. Studio that we're in.
Good.
Yeah.
Gravy. So,
we'll see. We'll see what if they find more examples of that.
Got any picks, boys?
I do.
I do.
Go ahead. Main.
Yeah, I'm going to do Consciousness Explained by Daniel Dennett. That's my pick. Consciousness Explained by Daniel Dennett.
I'm currently halfway through the book. You remember a week or two ago, I suggested Super Communicators, and in casual conversation, somebody brought up Never Split the Difference, a book mm-hmm. written by a former FBI hostage negotiator. And it's one of those books where, you know, it matches your intuitions, just like Super Communicators, but provides concrete examples. Although instead of being in academia, they come from horrifying tales of people who have been abducted. And there's one vignette where he realized, like, his breakthrough moment, the old FBI playbook would be, somebody claims to have so-and-so kidnapped. So you would ask a question that only they would know. Like, you know, if my wife was kidnapped, the question might be, who was the
write this down, everybody.
Who was the first dog that we shared together that passed away? And then she would correctly identify the name of the dog. And it's like, okay, now we know. But there was one moment where he was passed on a tape that somebody kind of sent as a lark, because it's like, ha, they didn't even call us. Listen to this hot garbage. But he was like, okay, whatever. And he listened to it and he noticed that they did something that normally would be very costly in a hostage negotiation. He got the person, or she got the kidnappee on the phone. And he was like, well, that's normally something that takes something to get to. And quite simply, whereas like FBI had a playbook, she just asked, well, how do I know you even have him? And there's a pause of about 10 seconds. And then the kidnapper is like, well, let me put him on the phone, because that was the best thing he could think of. And those opportunities, those open-ended questions allow for, number one, it makes your job their job, and wears them down and gets them closer to, or likewise, somebody might say, I got so-and-so, I want $1 million. And instead of saying, I can't do that or whatever, you answer with the open-ended question, how am I supposed to do that? And now you've taken their problem and kicked it right back to them. And now they're doing your work for you. And in hostage negotiation, apparently it's all about just time, time's all that matters. Mm. It's a very good book. I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
My pick is going to be Shogun again. It's good. Watched the most recent episode last night. Still a good show. Looking forward to the finale. Oh, boy. I'll tell you what. Nothing has given the Game of Thrones vibes, like the good Game of Thrones vibes, including the Game of Thrones spinoff, better than the Shogun.
Cool. Never Split the Difference, like, that book's been highly recommended. I'm looking forward to reading it. But when I see a title like that, I always wonder, like, man, like, what's that person like to have to deal with in real life?
Oh, constantly asking what and how questions, answering questions. It's like, hey, could you take out the garbage? It's like, what is it about taking out the garbage that's so important to you? It's like, it's because I don't want the garbage in my house, sweetheart. And it's like, how would you feel if the garbage stayed here?
In my books, whenever I try to figure out, like, what would a clever criminal do, you have to think through a lot of these situations. And you'd say, okay, like, knowing that what, like, I have a scene in a book that just came out with, there's like a hostage situation or maybe a hostage situation. And how does how do negotiators like do that? How do they get by for time, get that person to do this, to figure out that, do the wear the person down? But if somebody is very smart on the other side of it, you know, one of the things is it's like, hey, I want $1 million, you know, in 4 hours, you know, I've got, if you have more to negotiate, if you have one person, well, you can kill one person. If you have several people, then you have more to bargain with. And if you're like, hey, yeah, in 1 hour, the first body gets pushed out the window, I'm breaking my phone and throwing it away right now, you can't get hold of me. And right. Then that puts it back in the negotiator, because now they're in a position like, oh shoot, we can't talk to them. Now we have, will they or won't they do that? And that, not to advise anybody if they want to get into a hostage situation.
Well, and keep in mind, this particular book is sort of a rejection of the getting to yes model, which was the previous best practices, where it's just like, get them saying yes, 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 yes. Would you like to not be beat up? Yes. Would you like to get away? Yes, yes, whatever. It's like, would you like to walk outside right now? Yes. Instead, he poses interesting questions like the power of getting them to say no, phrasing a question like, would you ever compromise on this? And they're like, no, never. And then, you know, after a few of those, they create kind of a mental cell that they've trapped themselves in, where it's like, well, if you don't like any of those things, then I think morally sounds like what you really want to do is be reasonable. And then I'll give one more tidbit from it. He points out that there's counterfeit yeses and real yeses, and a third type of yes that I won't talk about, but the a counterfeit yes,
forbidden yes,
is the
crypto coin yes,
the counterfeit yes,
the banned yes,
is what we do to just make people go away. So it's like, Brian, you ought to work out. And I'd say, you're right. And what I'm saying is,
I'd like to not talk about this.
Exactly. Whereas you might say,
that was
say,
in Japan.
As a matter of fact, I believe he mentions that in there. The real yes is when we have a conversation about how much I value my health or how much the benefits are. And then we get to a place where finally you say, well, it sounds like you need to work out. And then I don't say, you're right. I say, that's right. So the difference mm-hmm. is that's right versus you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good book.
Yeah. I'll just a little cut on there. When I was in Japan, I had to always understand when yes meant yes, or yes just meant you've made your point. We in theory, we're going to say yes.
Yeah.
But that's not a yes. And part of that too, I realize, is often the person you're talking to doesn't have the authority to make that decision or wants more time to make it. And that was just like, okay, when is yes actually a yes?
Yeah. It's a good book. I look forward to hearing your take on it. Well, neither of you said that's right, but whatever.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Hey. Gentlemen, it's been weird.